This is Self-Work, and I'm Dr. Margaret Rutherford. At Self-Work, we discuss psychological and emotional issues and what you can do about them, whether that's learning self-acceptance, taking action, or seeking therapy or treatment. 8 years ago, I extended the walls of my practice to reach those of you who might already be knowledgeable about mental health treatment, but also to those of you who might say you'd never darken the door of a therapist. And yet, you are here. I'll answer your questions while I invite you to take a few minutes for your own self-work.
I was just diagnosed with bipolar disorder, and I told people about it. It's sad that it became an advocacy point. It's sad that it had to become a career. You know, when I told people I had red hair, they were just like, that's nice. You're not going to build a career off of redhead advocacy, right? I mean, you get a couple of jokes here and there, right? I mean, yeah. You know, you get called, you know, I'm a carrot top, but nobody said that I was brave for living as a redhead. Mm-hmm. I was born with bipolar disorder, but they think I'm brave for just admitting that I have it.
Welcome to this week's edition of Self-Work. Today, we're going to be talking about bipolar disorder, and we have a very, very special guest, Gabe Howard, who's an award-winning podcast host, author, and actually very sought-after speaker. Back in 2003, he was diagnosed with bipolar and anxiety disorders after he was in a psychiatric hospital. And he's used his very personal knowledge, as well as being very, very educated about bipolar disorder in general, to spread accurate descriptions and accurate information about what it's like to have and to cope with bipolar disorder. He hosts the weekly Inside Mental Health podcast for Healthline Media and is the author of Mental Illness is an Asshole and Other Observations. He's written in all kinds of publications, including the Stanford Online Medical Journal, and he's been a guest forever. I've known Gabe for years. He's at home in Columbus, Ohio with his wife and says a miniature schnauzer dog that he never wanted, but now can't imagine life without. I bet he wrote that himself. The governor of Ohio called him an everyday hero, and he's been the recipient of Mental Health America's Norman Guidry Award. So he's a special guy, and he's got great information. Let's first talk about bipolar disorder in general. You've got bipolar 1 disorder, bipolar 2 disorder, and cyclothymic disorder, which basically is a list from most severe to least severe in disorders that involve mood swings, sometimes terrific mood swings like manic symptoms such as you believe you're God or you're spending a lot of money that you don't have or you have very irrational, grandiose beliefs. To depression, where you go to bed and can't get out, where you can even have some sort of suicidal ideation. If you have 4 or more of these episodes in a year, it's what's called rapid cycling. Then bipolar 2 disorder is a pattern also of depressive episodes and hypomanic episodes, but they're not as severe as what are called manic episodes or really, really excessively agitated times where you have rapid speech, where you have rapid thinking. Either one of these disorders can be very difficult to deal with. But then there's cyclothymic disorder, where you also have these sort of recurring hypomanic and depressive symptoms, but they're not intense enough or don't last long enough to qualify as actually hypomanic and depressive. So you're called cyclothymic. They estimate almost 3% of U.S. adults had bipolar disorder in the past year, and about evenly divided between males and females. But it also says that almost 5% of us, about 4.5% of us in the United States, experience bipolar disorder at some time in their lives. So I think this is a very important kind of discussion to have. We are going to be talking about suicide. So the 988 text lifeline.org link will be in your show notes. But you could also text 988 and you'll get right to a suicide prevention line. And also, just as a note, I couldn't remember the name of this psychiatrist that I'd heard give this wonderful talk on bipolar disorder, and I found it. It's Dr. Roger Sparhawk, Sparhawk. But before we get going today, let's hear from our wonderful sponsor, AG1. Just had my athletic greens this morning, and they are great. It's important to me that the supplements I take are of the highest quality, And that's why, for years, I've been drinking AG1. Unlike many supplement brands, AG1 conducts relentless testing to set the standard for purity and potency. Quality for AG1 isn't just a buzzword, it's a commitment. And at each step of the process, AG1 goes above and beyond industry standards. I know I can trust what's in every scoop of AG1 because they obsess over product quality, the standards of their manufacturing, and sustainable practices. Taking care of your health shouldn't be complicated, and AG1 simplifies this by replacing all those multiple health supplements, like your multivitamins, digestive aids, immune support, and more in just one simple scoop. AG1's ingredients are heavily researched for their quality, and I love that every scoop also includes prebiotics, probiotics, and digestive enzymes for gut support. I've partnered with AG1 for so long because they make such a high-quality product that I drink every day. So if you want to replace your multivitamin and more, start with AG1. Try it and get a free one-year supply, a free one-year supply of vitamin D3 plus K2 and five free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription at drinkag1.com/selfwork. Again, that's drinkag1.com/selfwork. Check it out. You'll be glad you did. So I want to introduce you to someone who feels like a friend, although I've never met him, Gabe Howard. We meet again, Gabe Howard. I'm so glad to have you on Self-Work. You have had me on your podcast when I wrote Perfectly Hidden Depression, and you were so kind to do that. But now I get to have you.
Oh, I am so happy to be here. Thank you so much.
You know, you have long been someone I've admired because it's been my experience and my belief that the more people model talking about their own struggles with mental health, that then more people will do the same and will follow suit. And you were one of the first people I ever heard talk about having bipolar disorder. And I just admire the heck out of that.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. It hasn't been I would love to say it's been an easy road, right? Like, I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder and then I started talking about it and I ended up here on a podcast with Dr. Margaret Rutherford. And it's all been easy. Yeah. But it was actually, it was harder than it needed to be. And that's what's incredibly frustrating for me, because as far as I was concerned, I was just speaking my truth.
Yeah.
I wish that there were, you know, people are like, well, you're a hero, you're brave, thank you for doing it. And I'm like, I didn't set out to do or be any of those things. I was just diagnosed with bipolar disorder and I told people about it.
Right.
And it's sad that it became an advocacy point. It's sad that it had to become a career. You know, when I told people I had red hair, they were just like, that's nice.
Yeah, you're not going to get a podcast because
You're not going to get a podcast for being a redhead. You're not going to build a career off of redhead advocacy, right? I mean, you get a couple of jokes here and there, right? You know, you get called, you know, I'm a carrot top, which is odd because I always thought those were green. But nobody said that I was brave for living as a redhead. Mm-hmm. I was born with bipolar disorder, but they think I'm brave for just admitting that I have it.
By the time I knew of you, you were already on air as a podcast host. So how did you get there?
Everything that's ever happened to me has been an accident. I swear every now and again, my dad will be like, well, he got there by running his mouth. And I always want to correct him, but he's kind of right. I was working over at psychcentral.com, where my podcast still lives, Inside Mental Health. I was writing. I was just a blogger. I was blogging about living with bipolar disorder. Huh? And one day I was talking to the founder of Psych Central, a gentleman by the name of Dr. John Grohol, you know, about stuff. And I said, hey, we need a podcast. It was just kind of an offhand comment. And John was like, okay, sure. You got a podcast now. And you know, the original podcast was called The Psych Central Show. It lived on Psych Central. And that was 9 years ago. It has had a name change, a few format changes along the way. But for the most part, it's the same show. And that's how it happened. It was a complete accident.
Wow. So when you were diagnosed with bipolar, how old were you? How did
how did it come to be that, or come to pass that you thought, well, wait a minute, this isn't just some ups and downs I'm having. This is something that has more, it's more akin to mental illness than it is, you know, being moody.
Yeah. If you would have asked me, I was committed to a psychiatric hospital because of suicidality and untreated bipolar. And if you would have asked me an hour before I was committed, if I had any mental illness or if there was anything wrong with me whatsoever, I would have said, absolutely not. I'm perfectly fine.
Okay.
If you would have said, Gabe, do you think about suicide all the time? I would have said yes. And if you would have asked me if that was a problem, I would have said no. Here's the thing. When you're born that way, right? When you're born with your brain working that way,
right?
It's normal to you. So I did think about suicide all the time. I had delusions. I had, you know, mania, and I had depression, and I had some days I felt like I was God, and some days I felt like I was garbage. But I believed very strongly that that was just the human condition. That was just my personality.
Yeah.
And this was driven really by the fact that, one, my brain always worked that way, so it's all I knew, right? So therefore, it's normal. Mm-hmm. And two, because anytime I would be symptomatic, my parents would punish me because they saw it as behavioral issues, right? They didn't realize that it was, you know, bipolar mania that made me stay up all night, and it was depression that made me not want to go to school. From their vantage point, you know, he stayed up all night and went out with his friends for 3 days, and now he won't get out of bed. Mania right. and depression was not on their radar.
So there was no one in the family prior to you?
Nope. I'm special.
Oh, there you go.
I'm special. Yeah, but not special in the cool way. I'm special in the uncool way. But so, yeah, it was just me. They didn't know.
Did you fight the diagnosis? Like, this is just the way I am. It's not an illness.
No, but I was 26 years old when I was diagnosed. So I'd had a lot of problems, okay. A lot of problems along the way. I'd hurt a lot of people, and I myself was not happy. And there was, you know, I was very, very suicidal. I was actively trying to take my own life. I had a plan. It was not a good scene. And they're like, this is not normal. And they started to explain to me why it's not normal to want to die. And then they tried to, you know, they started explaining, you know, getting me stable in the hospital. They diagnosed me with bipolar disorder and started to explain it. You know, they gave me the pamphlet. They answered my questions. And I started meeting other people with bipolar disorder, and they would describe right. things. And I would be like, I do that. And they're like, right, that's, do you want to do that? And then little pieces started to fill in. And one of the biggest pieces, Dr. Rutherford, was, do you want to do that? And I said, no. And they're like, why do you? And when I really, really examined that, why do I do that? Yeah, I'm not in control here. I'm doing it because of some sort of compulsion or disease process. I'm not making an active choice to be this way. It is happening to me.
So what is it? I'm not doing it. What do you mean? I lost you there.
So let's go with like mania, okay. Right? Why am I talking 1,000 miles a minute? Why do I think that I'm a literal God? Why do I think that consequences don't bother me? Why am I spending all of my money? Why am I doing all of like those types of things? Why am I telling my mother that I hate her? Why am I behaving this way? Because when the whole thing is over, I have deep, deep remorse and regret.
Yes.
You know, the Gabe Howard apology tour is practically a thing in my late teens and early 20s because I was so unreliable and hurt so many people. And then let's talk about like the suicidal depression where I wanted to die, mm-hmm. where I was contemplating the pros and cons of living or dying, where I decided that if I did die, my grandmother and my mother, two people who love me just as much as you can love another human, they love me. I had convinced myself that they would be proud of me for dying. That they would be at my funeral and they're like, oh, we're so glad that he took his own life. He finally made a good decision. That's what was going through my mind.
Wow.
I didn't want to make those decisions. I didn't want to think that way. I wasn't actively deciding to do this. It just happened. And then I would, for lack of a better word, sober up. And I'm using sober in air quotes.
Yeah.
Like I would realize what happened after the fact. And that's what I mean by I'm not making the decision. If I decided one day, hey, I'm going to stay up all night and not go to school tomorrow, and then I stayed up all night and I didn't go to school tomorrow and a bad consequence happened, hey, you're right. That would be my fault. But what would end up happening is while the consequence was happening, I think, why did I do this?
Yes, exactly.
Why? And then I would think to myself, I didn't want to, but I guess I didn't not want to. It's a very bizarre space to be in where you recognize that you did it, but you have zero understanding as to why.
You know, one of the things that they say, or experts will say, about bipolar disorder, and I'm trying to wonder if you experience this, that there are times that you're not going up, that you're not manic, or that you're not going down. You're just sort of in the middle. Are those times, did you experience that? And were those times where you did have sort of these, aha, this is not exactly what am I doing?
See, that's the hardest part, right? I like to call bipolar disorder the intermittent illness, because when you're symptomatic, it's easy to spot that something's wrong.
Yeah.
Right. If you spend all of your money, if you cheat on your partner, if you lie to somebody, if you quit your job, if you've got the grandiose $1 million idea, because you know better than everybody else, right? Like all of the, you know, depression where you can't leave the house, you haven't showered in days, or you lose your job, or you're unreliable. Like all of those things are very, they look a certain way. And most people forget about bipolar disorder. Most people, upon witnessing that behavior, would think to themselves, that's odd. Right? Mm-hmm. Something's going on there. Mm-hmm. Now let's talk about, like you said, scrolling to the middle. See, when you scroll to the middle, it is when you regret the things, the symptoms, and you're right. Like, why did I do that? Right? Like I talked about before. But the second part of that is, now you know that you can be quote unquote good, right? Mm-hmm. So now whenever I'm symptomatic, I think normal. To myself, why am I behaving this way? I know that I can be normal, stereotypical, average. Also, not for nothing, when you're in the middle, when you're grounded, centered, normal, typical, whatever words you want to use, that's when you get the job. That's when you meet the girl. That's when you save the money. That's when you rent the apartment. That's when you make the connections, you know, all the things that you lose when you're symptomatic. And finally, not to put too fine of a point on this, but usually the middle would be attributed to something. And in my early years, the middle was always attributed to parental intervention. Oh. Why is Gabe being good now? Well, because dad set him straight. Why is Gabe being good now? Well, mom and dad grounded him for 3 weeks. Now, we've learned since those things had nothing to do with it. Mm-mm. My parents punishing me, it was all just luck. But they didn't know that. They just kept punishing me until I listened. But in actuality, the punishment isn't what did it. It was just the random cycling of bipolar disorder. They just thought that I was a very strong-willed, problematic child.
I am surprised that if you had recurrent suicidal thinking, that they didn't put you on medication, or did they put you on medication that then made it worse?
No, when I was 26, I was put on medication.
Yeah,
I
didn't really tell you had this way before that.
Yeah, but I never told anybody. Oh. I thought that everybody did this.
Oh.
When I looked at my parents, my grandparents, my friends, my aunt, my uncle, my teachers, you know, everybody, I thought that they too were weighing the pros and cons of life and death. Hmm. The example that I always use is, I have never in my entire life seen my mother go to the bathroom, but I'm positive that she does, right? I don't need to witness it to know that my mother utilizes the facilities. So even though I had never heard any of these people speak about their own suicidality or their own mortality, I just assumed they were doing it.
I
just thought it was one of those things that you didn't discuss, much like going to the bathroom, right? Yeah. You just don't walk out into public and start announcing your bathroom behavior. So I thought, you just don't announce, you don't discuss your suicidality. But make no mistake, you know, what's the book say? Everybody poops. Everybody is suicidal. That's what I believed.
Right.
It was,
you know, I have a good eye-opening, because I, in my 20s, read an article in People magazine by William Shatner, and he was talking about tinnitus, and your ears ringing. And I've had tinnitus all my life. And I said, it's a disorder. There's something wrong. I thought everybody's ears rang, you know? And so that's a very simple, but you're right. You can just believe that, well, what's going on inside of me is going on inside of everybody else.
Exactly. And again, when you're born this way, it's normal. And my parents accidentally reinforced this to me. Mm-hmm. They made it very clear that I was in control of these symptoms. They never said, there was never any discussion about, why are you behaving this way? They really just thought that they just had a strong-willed male child who was pushing every button and every boundary. And it didn't help. I want your audience to know, one, I love my parents. They're great people. They did the best they could. And two, what they did wasn't helpful to me, and it caused a lot of problems. Those two things can exist. But the next thing that I want them to know is that I'm the oldest, right? My mother got pregnant in high school. She always loves it when I tell this story. So she was a young mom, right? And here my parents are. They're trying to figure out what to do with this child, who is their first, and they don't know. Now, you ask my mom now, she's like, oh yeah. Once Gabe's brother hit his teenage years, we're like, whoa, there's a big difference. And then my sister was just super easy. If I would have been the third child, right, they would have been like, that's not normal.
That's weird. Mm-hmm.
But I was the first child. And what does every single person tell parents when their child turns 13? Uh-oh, yeah, they're teenagers. Buckle up. It's going to be hell.
Well, so, and also, I don't know if you, I'm sure you know this because you're an expert on this, but for example, when I was in graduate school, they said no child can be diagnosed with bipolar disorder. It doesn't exist in children.
Yeah, there was.
And it does. But yeah, back then there was a real, it was a big no-no to diagnose any child with bipolar.
Women's health needs, and especially our hormonal needs, are finally receiving the attention we've deserved for years. And Hormone Harmony, a new sponsor of Self-Work, rates as one of the top five hormonal supplement companies out there. If you're a young woman struggling with that week before your period when moods can be all over the place, and I certainly don't miss that, or older when you're so glad menopause is here, but if you're like me, you sometimes stare at yourself in the mirror and ask, where did I go? Hormone Harmony has become a phenomenon. Women cannot stop talking about it on social media, and a bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. Basically, if you breathe in and out slowly twice, that's the amount of time it takes for one more woman to understand she can reach out for help, no matter what her age, through Hormone Harmony. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code SELFWORK at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code SELFWORK for 15% off today.
There's so much that I can say that I have no idea if I would have been diagnosed with bipolar disorder had my parents understood. But I think that if they could have gotten some education, which has been the basis of my career, I often joke that my job is to explain things to my dad, right? Because my father's a good man. He's a good man and he wants to understand, but he's a truck driver. He's got a fourth grade education. He doesn't read very well, but he respects experts. He wants to learn from experts and he wants to understand for the good of him and his family. Mm-hmm. And he couldn't find resources because you can't just make an appointment with a doctor and ask about your son. And even if you could, would he understand? Right. So I made it my life's work to help people like my dad and my family and me understand this stuff because I think we need to understand it. That was the missing link. Again, you have no idea how many people are like, so your dad beat you? No. Your mom was an alcoholic? No. Is it because she was pregnant in high school? Listen, stop it. No, no. The key thing that left me in harm's way was lack of education and lack of understanding. Mm-hmm. I grew up in the 80s, right? That was strike one. I grew up in a stereotypically blue-collar family. That was strike two. And we didn't discuss emotions. We just didn't. Men were supposed to be strong and stoic. And every time I cried, I hid it. Anytime I had suicidal thoughts, it's because I was weak. So I hid it. And nobody came to me and addressed mental health or emotions or anything. So therefore, it was never discussed, which reinforced to me that it was something private in you, just like crying. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I got zero help. And my parents absolutely screwed that up. But they were doing the best they could. And I think we need to allow space for both of those things to exist.
Of course, it's an and. It's definitely an and. So what kind of, what euphemistic term, or do I want to use a euphemistic term? What has been your experience with medications?
Mostly positive. But sort of. Here's the first thing I want to say. All's well that ends well. Right. I am stable because of medication. If I did not have medication, I would not have the ability to control the delusions. I would not have the ability to stop the mania. I would not have the ability to control the suicidal depression. I have this gigantic range of emotions that's so wide, it's impossible for me to control. The medication makes a more manageable range. It wipes out the suicidal depression. It absolutely helps me control that range. Because of the medication, I no longer have delusions, I no longer have suicidal depression, and I no longer have mania. And those three things being gone allows me to go to therapy and learn coping skills, learn emotion management, because I'm not dealing with those extremes. when you think demons are chasing you, that's not the time to learn about co-regulation of, stimuli, right? If you're having a panic attack so bad, you can't leave the house, your vision is blurry, you're so sweaty and your heart is pounding, right? Now's not the time to learn about a breathing exercise, right? You've got to be able to control those to learn the coping skills. Now, that said, the side effects of medication are horrific. They're horrific. And until I got the right medications, I had a lot of really bad side effects. Mm-hmm. I had sexual side effects where here I am, 26 years old, and suddenly I can't have sex anymore. That's not a good feeling.
No.
I had weight gain. That's not a great feeling. I had lethargy where I would take these pills and I'd sleep 20 hours a day. That's no good. Mm-hmm. Even to this day, I have dry mouth and a slight tremor. Now, I don't mind either one of those things because, I'm not a fine artist. I'm not a pianist. I'm not a flautist. I don't care about the tremor or the dry mouth, but my dentist cares because now I'm getting cavities because I'm 50 years old and I've had chronic dry mouth my whole life. And my teeth are like, we really like some of that phlegm in there to keep your teeth healthy. And I'm like, I can't believe this thing has bit me in the ass.
So what would you say? And I won't mention the name of the author, but I've had her on. She also basically finally got diagnosed with bipolar disorder. And she is a strong, strong voice for you can cure your own bipolar disorder. That it is not something that is you have to take meds the rest of your life. And she uses herself as an example of such.
First off, she uses herself.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, here you go. I will just tell everybody the medication that I am on, and then every single person with bipolar disorder will be able to lead the exact same life as me because I'm a study of one.
Right.
Look, I have no idea if she personally is able to control bipolar disorder without medication assistance. Mm-hmm. Maybe she is. But,
right.
Somebody, there are documented cases of people who have jumped out of airplanes, their parachutes did not open, and they survived, right? If any of those people become advocates to get rid of parachutes when skydiving, I would be very concerned about that.
Oh, you're funny, Gabe.
We have to look at your best odds.
Yes.
Is there somebody out there who can do it? Let's go ahead and say yes. That number is extraordinarily small. We also have to consider that bipolar disorder, like almost every illness on the planet, is a spectrum. So, mm-hmm. for example, if you've got just a little bit of bipolar, which I know sounds like a really weird thing to say, mm-hmm. maybe you can control it. Mm-hmm. But if you have a lot of bipolar, I don't see how I'm going to be able to control godlike mania, suicidal depression, demons chasing me with my delusions, all by force of will. I do want to say I'm aligned with her idea of personal choices, right? We need to let people choose their own recovery. We can't tell people what to do because it doesn't work. Even in cases of forced treatment, it may stabilize them, but as soon as you remove the force, they're traumatized and they stop taking them and you get a lot of recidivism, the word that I can never
recidivism.
Ever pronounce.
Recidivism.
Yes.
Thank you.
Recidivism. So I am aligned with her multiple pathways to recovery, and we have to make our own decisions. And when you said you had her on the show, I want you to know the first thing that I thought is good.
Yeah.
Right. We need this out there. Mm-hmm. So many podcasts, blogs, articles, they're pushing this message aside as if it's not important. I want to be very clear. I think that it's wrong and I think it's short-sighted, but that doesn't mean that it doesn't deserve space in the public discourse. Because Lord knows she thinks I'm wrong, and I would like to think that she would not remove my voice.
Exactly.
And that's what people with bipolar disorder need, a voice. Mm-hmm. But you asked me what I thought about it, and I think it is most likely wrong. But maybe in small cases, it could be right, and that's why choice is so important.
Yeah, it's very important. I had my second guest on Self-Work now about 4 years ago. And one of them was Terry Chaney. And I'm sure you know her work. She, the book that I read, she's had 4 or 5. She's a wonderful writer. She said that when she was not manic, but she acted out sexually a lot when she was manic. And so she would write herself like a list of what not to do when you're manic. So, and she would like post it on her refrigerator. And I mean, it was really amusing reading some of the things that she said because she did some pretty out there things. But Have you ever done that? Like tried to corral yourself or try to have something, you know, that you had written or that you had come up with to remind you, wait a minute, this is depression or this is mania.
Not exactly. Some of the behavior I wasn't actively trying to stop, which was probably problematic. And by the time I realized I needed to stop it, I was further along in my recovery where it was somewhat easier to stop. I abused drugs and alcohol. I definitely had hypersexuality, but I never really tried to curb that behavior until much later in the process.
Okay.
Unfortunately, it had to be pointed out to me, but what I do want to touch on is, you know, the feelings of worthlessness and depression. Mm-hmm. I do so much to combat that even to this day. For example, I know you can't see it, but if you look over to my right here, there's this whole great big bulletin board. And on the bulletin board are notes that people have written me, emails, cards, thank you letters, old badges from conferences that I've spoken at, stickers that people have sent me. And it, when I'm like, look, I'm pointless, I'm worthless, I'm not helping anybody. It's hard. I don't want people to pretend. It's one of the reasons that I leave it out in the open so much, because I just look at it and then hopefully I see something, a picture, a letter, something that just reminds me that I have value. So in that way, I'm desperately trying to curb the depression, the imposter syndrome, and it can be hard sometimes. I think bipolar disorder tried to kill me. However, bipolar disorder did inspire my career. Bipolar disorder is why I'm talking to you.
So it's what you did with it. It's the way you have managed it, like you said, making lemonade out of lemons.
I think that the credit should go to the people who achieved greatness. And I know lots of people with bipolar disorder, anxiety, schizophrenia, depression, and they go out and they do these amazing things, whatever it is, whether it's their accountants, their lawyers, their doctors, their, you know, grocery store clerks and artists and podcasters and everything in between. Mm-hmm. And sometimes people are like, well, that's because of your illness. And I'm like, no, that's because of them. Like, they're incredible. They're living their best life in spite of having this albatross around their neck. And then I sort of feel like, you know, bipolar disorder tries to claim a little credit. Like, hey, you owe me. No, I don't. That's just, come on, man. That's just it. What's that called? Stockholm syndrome?
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. I really think, bipolar disorder took a lot from me. It cost me friends. It cost me family. It cost me time. It could have cost me my life. And now that I'm doing really, really well, whenever anybody's like, well, but yo, bipolar disorder, right? I'm like, no, bipolar disorder owes me. Yeah. Now, again, that's my framing. I would never take that away from anybody else. Some people feel very strongly that bipolar disorder is a superpower for them. And I say, great. Like, that's fantastic. Like, we all get to choose our own adventure and define our experiences however we want. Mm-hmm. For me, I'm taking all the credit and I ain't sharing. But
there you go.
Other people are allowed.
Exactly. Yeah, I really like that framework because it is about, again, there's that uniqueness. You know, if it helps you to think of it in a certain way, then that's fine. But if it doesn't, and if you, like you said, bipolar nearly killed you. I remember recently hearing Roger Hawkshank. Roger. His first name is Roger, and he writes a lot about bipolar disorder. And he says that actually with adequate treatment, bipolar disorder, the cycles themselves get further and further apart with adequate treatment. And when you don't get treatment, they get further and they get worse and they get further and further together. They happen more frequently. So have you experienced that?
Yeah. Once I got stable, I was really able to remove the extremes. It took 4 years from the time that I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder to what I call recovery.
Yeah.
It took about 4 years. Now, what I refer to as recovery is I spend more of my life living my life than I do managing bipolar disorder. Okay. So I don't want anybody to hear that I was, you know, completely sick for 4 years. I just, you know, in that 4 year time frame, I had, you know, relapses and I had issues and the medication would stop working or, you know, I had other problems. So I was constantly like, fighting it. Mm-hmm. And then one day I realized that things were just kind of on an even keel. And then I was able to build my life off of that foundation. So that's why I've pegged the number at about 4 years from diagnosis to recovery. It's so much easier. Once you're in control of your own brain, life gets easier. I'm not saying that I've never made a mistake. I've made countless mistakes. But one of the things that people say when you make a mistake is you're supposed to like reflect back. How did you make the mistake? What did you do wrong? In therapy circles, it can be called a chain analysis, right? Mm-hmm. Where you start at the mistake and you go all the way back and you try to figure out how you got into that situation. One of the hardest parts about bipolar disorder is you have no ability to do that. You finally realize that something's wrong and like, okay, how did you get here? I don't know. I have no idea. And even if you can find bits and pieces of it inside that scrambled brain of yours, you're probably not remembering it correctly. Mm-hmm. You know, depression and mania just has a way of coloring everything that you see. Sure. You're like, well, how did you get here? Well, I remember my mom yelling at me and I didn't like that. So I left. What was your mom yelling at you about? I don't know. And then you come to find out later that your mom was yelling at you to, you know, put the knife down and stop screaming. And you're like, well, why was I doing that? I have no memory of this whatsoever. And it turns out that you didn't know you were holding the knife. You were mad about something you saw on the television while you were making a sandwich. But because you were loud and screaming and waving it everywhere, that was scary. And then you got mad that they were scared of you. But you're getting all this third hand. And now, okay, so what's the lesson? Don't make a sandwich and watch television? Right. What are you supposed to do with this nightmare of a story?
So is there anything else that you can think of, Gabe, that you would want to make sure that someone who is wondering, gosh, could I have bipolar disorder? What they could, should, might, would be a good idea if they did?
Yeah, I think if you're wondering if you have bipolar disorder, you should absolutely make an appointment with a psychologist or a psychiatrist, and get it checked out. For some reason, in mental health, people don't think that they can go get a checkup or get it checked out unless they're positive they have it. Could you imagine if we had this in physical health? I'm not feeling well. What's wrong? I don't know. Well, you're going to go ask a doctor what's wrong? No, until I figure out what's wrong, I'm staying home.
Right.
Whenever we have a physical health problem, we go to the doctor and the doctor tells us what's wrong. Whenever we have a mental health problem, we think that we have to diagnose ourselves before we can go get help. Mm. Look, the suspicion is enough. Maybe you're right. Maybe you're wrong. Who cares? This is what experts are for. And honestly, you need to keep an open mind. So many people I hear about, they're like, well, I took a quiz online and it said that I had bipolar disorder. And then Gabe, I listened to your podcast and I agreed with a lot of what you were saying. And then I went to the doctor and then that doctor told me that I didn't have that. And that doctor's a liar. I believe you. And I'm like, you should not believe me. I haven't examined you. I'm not a doctor. You listened to a podcast and you took an online quiz.
Right.
The doctor is a medical expert who has examined you. Also, why are you angry you don't have bipolar disorder? Like, that's a great day. Like, this is the greatest day in the world. You know, the person didn't tell you that you were fine. They diagnosed you with something else. They observed something else. They're practicing an abundance of caution, right? They're not just immediately agreeing with you when you walk in the door. It sounds like you made an appointment with a really, really good psychiatrist or psychologist.
Yeah, or who might just look at you and go, I'm not real sure. I'm not real sure what's going on. Let's give it some time and let me try to get to know you better.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So I would say to anybody, you know, the suspicion is enough to get it checked out. If people hear nothing else on this whole show, it's that if you suspect you have bipolar disorder or any mental illness, make an appointment, right? That's all you have to do. The second thing is it takes a long time. Don't believe television. On television, people get diagnosed with bipolar disorder and they're fine in a week. Yeah. On television, people get diagnosed with mental illness and they take their pills as prescribed and they're fine in a week. That's not how any of this works. It takes a long time. Buckle down. You're going to make mistakes. You're going to relapse. You're going to have side effects. You're going to practice coping skills that don't work. You're going to use coping skills that work a little bit that you've got to hone in. You're going to have to go to a lot of therapy and you're going to have to listen to a lot of podcasts and read a lot of books and do a lot of introspection to learn what works for you. It is not easy.
Mm-mm. No, it's not easy. It's not easy. And yet when you do the work, the outcome of you doing the work is phenomenal.
Oh, so phenomenal. It's given me my best life, my absolute best life. I am married with a dog and a house and a podcast, all because of hard work in therapy, hard work in support groups, hard work by myself, and of course, medication as well. But all of those things combined together have allowed me to live well and not beat myself up too much.
Gabe, how can folks get in touch with you to learn more about you, to learn more about, or to learn from your podcast, or what do you have out there? You have a book.
Yeah.
how mental illness is an asshole and other observations.
Yep. I wrote a book called Mental Illness is an Asshole and Other Observations, which you can get wherever they sell books. But if you go to my website, I'll sign up for you and send you some free swag. And that website is GabeHoward.com. Also over on GabeHoward.com are all the links to the podcasts Inside Mental Health and Inside Bipolar. Absolutely check them out. They're absolutely free. And they're good shows, if I do say so myself, because Dr. Margaret Rutherford was on a previous episode. So you should absolutely check that out.
Thank you so much, Gabe. I really, really appreciate it.
You're very, very welcome. Thank you for having me.
You betcha. I hope you enjoyed that interview as much as I did. Gabe Howard, like I said in the intro, is also so personally interested in this topic as it has affected his whole life and, as he said, nearly killed him. But he's trying to give out really great and accurate mental health information in his own podcast. He and I share this passion. It was great to catch up with him again. If you want to support Self-Work, there's some great Zazzle merchandise out there, and I'll have the link. We have a mug, a t-shirt, a sweatshirt. We've got all kinds of things with Self-Work on them, so you can let people know, hey, I'm doing my Self-Work. How about you? I also want to state that it's incredible to me, but as I record this, my TEDx talk is up to almost 675,000 views and almost 500 comments. Check it out. It's called How to Recognize Perfectly Hidden Depression and is about the need for transparency in our culture. Thank you, as always, for being here. Please take care of yourself, your family, and your community. I'm Dr. Margaret, and this has been Self-Work.